Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Welcome to the PM Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Study Group Conference Call and Podcast. This is podcast number 76. We are recording the session on the 6th of August, 2009, and we are now totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK Guide. Today's topic is Project Integration Management as portrayed in version 4 of the Guide to Project Management Body of Knowledge. My name is Dana Safford. I'll be your host and presenter today. I work for Hewlett-Packard as a complex problem manager, which means I take a very complex issue that is affecting one of HP's customers' large production environments, and I manage a project with a virtual technical team that quickly resolves that particular issue. So I'm involved in numerous virtual projects, virtual teams at the same time. As certifications go, I'm a PMP. I'm a Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, and hopefully by the end of October of this year, I'll complete upgrading my ITIL certification to the version 3 expert level. So far, I've got 3 tests down and 2 tests to go, so I'm almost there. So let's move on. If you haven't downloaded a PDF copy of today's presentation, please do so. We distribute the file through Yahoo Groups. We have a group called PM Lessons Learned. So if you need to sign up, if you need the steps in order to join Yahoo Groups, if you haven't been there yet, what you need to do first is go to our website, pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand column, you'll see a pointer labeled Files and Presentations, and that will tell you what you need to do to join Yahoo Groups and sign up for the PM Lessons Learned group. Acceptance is automatic, and then you'll be able to go to download the files. If you are already a member of Yahoo Groups, once you're logged in there, go to the PM Lessons Learned group page, click the Files link in the left-hand column, and then what you're looking for is a folder called Materials for the Monthly PMP Exam Study Group. And once you are in there, it is the 4th file down at the moment anyway. I get in there and I mess things up every now and again. But for right now, it is the 4th file down. The file name is PMLL Integration Management with today's date, August 6, 2009, and it's a PDF file. The title of that particular file is Presentation on Project Integration Management with the August 6, 2009 date as well. You'll also see a bunch of other files there from the last couple of months of calls. So if you want to grab any of those, feel free to do so. There's some helpful things in there. As we were talking before I turned on the recording, I've also placed up there a file that lists a bunch of version 4 study references. It's a little difficult to find them right now since we've just switched over to version 4 last month, at least the test has anyway. And so it's hard to find things. I've given you some ideas and where to go. To find things there. Also, if you happen to go down into the past study call group files, a lot of the stuff there, in fact, all the stuff there is for PMBOK version 3, so be careful using those things. Roughly 30% of the material is different from version 3 to version 4, and that's pretty much all in the processes in their ITTOs. So you can use other things in there, like David's EVM presentation and a few other things, but use it with a grain of salt. And if it talks about a process or inputs, tools and techniques and outputs, be careful because that's where all the changes are in version 4 pretty much. Finally, if you're on a shorter time scale and are willing to make a commitment to actively participate and take turns presenting, you've heard David already talk about our weekly study group that we have. And then for more information on that, you can send an email to pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. All right, any questions before I get started? All right, we're hearing nothing. I heard a couple people doing star sixes. Thank you so much. I've already muted anybody, so anyone who's just joined the call, if you could do a star six, I would appreciate it if you mute your phone so we don't get so much noise. and then we'll get started here. So basically, we are PMLessonsLearned.com. We are project managers helping project managers to make a difference. And I'll thank you in advance for attending this month's conference call or listening to the podcast. So let's move to slide one of the slide deck and start talking about what we do here at PM Lessons Learned. We have three calls per month. The first is the one you're on right now. First Thursday of the month is our monthly PMP study group call. On the second Thursday of the month, we talk about job shopping. And those of you folks who are between jobs or between assignments, you can join that call at the same number, same time, and talk about job search. And Henry provides a lot of nifty stuff for folks in between positions. On the third Thursday of the month, we have our Lessons Learned call. That is the one where we talk about overall topics for project management, risk management. We had one last month about closing projects, things along those lines. So those are general topics on project management. You can listen to any of these things by downloading, connecting to the web, downloading the podcast. So you'll find the link to find the podcast at pmlessonslearned.com. And you can also join our Yahoo group, because that's where all the files are. So if this is your first time here, definitely join that group so you can very quickly get to the files next month. Or if you join the any of the other calls in the month, the calls are all at the same Yahoo group. So I'm going to move to the next slide and talk about call norms. This is an interactive call. We really want you to participate, so feel free if you want to ask a question, make a comment, do a star six, unmute yourself, and get my attention so that you can ask your question. Just sing out, and I'll eventually respond to you and acknowledge you, and then you can go ahead and ask your question, because we don't want to be talking over each other if we can avoid it. Moving on to slide three. Our email address, as we've mentioned before, is pmstudy@pmlessonslearned.com is the one to get to us for most things. So use that one should you need to reach us for anything in particular. And now moving on to slide four is the legalese that I need to go through. The participants of this first Thursday of the month call are really meant to use this material as additional study material. Because we really want to make sure you have all the right critical mass to pass your test on the first try. Much of the material in the sessions comes from one of in my opinion, one of the best books on PM study, and that is Kim Heldman's Project Management Professional Exam Study Guide. The fifth edition is the edition that focuses on version 4 of the PMBOK. It's produced by part of the CYBEX series by John Wiley and Sons. And the ISBN number is there, so you can get right to the fifth version. It's to make sure if you're going to buy a book, it is the fifth version, and with that you get a study guide, you get a CD with practice tests, flashcards, and a test engine for under $70. You can't beat it for folks who are between assignments right now. So it's probably the best buy out there. All of the material in this is used with the permission of the publisher. I have instructor privileges with the CYBEX series. So we get to share the information with you folks. And with that, I'm moving to the title slide on slide five. We're talking about project integration management today, and we'll start right away by getting into the next slide. Slide six, where we're looking at the overall project integration management knowledge area. We're down from seven processes in version 3 to six processes in version 4. They've done a little mixing and matching, and they've done a whole bunch of changes inside the inputs, tools, and techniques, and the outputs. So as I mentioned earlier, this is where the bulk of the changes are from version 3 to version 4. So use any version 3 material you have with a grain of salt. Try to grab the version 4 stuff that we have up in our PM Lessons Learned file area. That's the best way to start right now, or start finding some things on the internet that will help you. If you've never joined one of these calls, what I will do is work through each one of these processes. We'll talk about inputs, tools, and techniques, and outputs, and some of the other ancillary things that you need to do. With version 4, what we've done is actually pull some things out of some of the earlier version 3 presentations, and they're going to be separate things, like when we get to how to choose a project, things along those lines. We're going to turn that into a separate Thursday night presentation, because there's a lot there. We're going to start right now by moving to slide 7 and talk about project management and integration, the integration of projects. This is basically concerned with the coordination of all of the aspects of a project plan. And I just noticed that typo in there. It is highly interactive, and we'll see how interactive it is on the next slide. Looking at slide 8, you see an eye chart there. These are all the flows that the PMBOK is showing for just one of the processes in there. So you can see there's arrows going all over the place. This slide has more arrows than a Boy Scout camp in the archery section. So be aware of all as many of these as you can. You don't have to memorize the flows per se, but you, to the greatest extent possible, if you can remember the inputs, the tools and techniques, and the outputs, it'll help you because there will be questions on those as you take the test. The folks that I've talked to who have taken the test in version 4 so far said they probably had 10 or so questions, 10 or 15 questions perhaps, on inputs, tools and techniques, and outputs of various things. So it's still a decent part of the test. Moving on to slide 9. We're beginning to talk about charters now, moving on and getting ready to talk about the first process. Officially, what a project charter does is recognizes that a project exists. It authorizes the project to begin. It'll assign a project manager, hopefully, talk about a business need, talk about requirements, perhaps, and it ties that project into something for the organization, hopefully. Moving on to slide 10. Here is the process, develop project charter. It's process number 4.1, and you see the five separate inputs. We'll talk about those in turn, one tool and technique and one output, and then we'll carry on to slide 11. The first input we'll talk about is a statement of work, or SOW. You'll see that abbreviation a lot. If you have one of these, what it's going to do is provide a description of the project, the service, or whatever is expected from this particular project. If it is external, then maybe your buyer is going to provide the statement of work because they're going to explicitly tell you what they want out of your consultancy, whatever the case may be. They'll talk about business needs, hopefully. Maybe talk about something about the scope to give you an idea of something about some scope, which I'll have to develop scope later on as well. Talk about what the project should really be, and maybe provide some tie-in to the company's strategic plan. Why is this project there? It might get into some project selection techniques, but probably not. If you made it this far, the chances are you've already been through some project selection technique. And what we'll do is in the next coming months, we'll have a separate session on what goes into selecting a project. There are a whole bunch of different ways to do it, and your company, your group, your organization has their own way of doing things, and we'll try to talk about some of those financial and non-financial methods of selecting projects in another session. Moving on to slide 12, we talk about needs and demands. You'll always hear about needs and demands. Why do projects happen? There are 6 of them in general. You could probably add a few more. Excuse me. But basically, there are 6 that we have to pay attention to. As you see, market demand, business need, request of a customer, some technological advance that requires you to have a project that will move you or along, keep you up with technology so your product does not become a dinosaur. There might be legal requirements that you have to pay attention to, or maybe some social needs or something along those lines. But these are normally the reasons why projects are initiated. There's something in one of these 6 things, and this will most likely be on the test in some shape or form. Moving to slide 13, let's talk about the next input, and that is the business case. This is a brand new process, input, I should say, to a process. Back a few years ago in version 3, they started thinking about business analysts. Anyone who's traveling around in business circles are now seeing a whole lot of discussion around business analysts. There are several trade show seminars that are for business analysts. There's even a good one called projectsummit.com that combines business analysis and project management into one seminar, one symposium. So in a 4-day period, you can get a little bit of each thing. It's becoming, they have their own body of knowledge called a BA BOC, their own body of knowledge, their own tests, and their own certification. But you will work, and sometimes as a project manager, hand in hand with the business analyst, and that business analyst will provide the business case that you need to understand why you're going through this, and they will help you provide those cost-benefit analyses and whatever else, the viability of that project. Why is it there? Why do you need it? Moving on to slide 14. If you're working outside, there'll be a contract that if the customer is external to the organization, and you're probably aware of contracts in any case, but they're going to document expected outcomes, conditions, time frames, all the legal stuff, because it is a legal binding document. There's all kinds of things in a contract for time frames, costs, remediation, all those types of things that will all be pointed out in the contract. So if you have an external one, you'll have to pay attention to that. Moving on to slide 15. And then we have two inputs that you're going to see a lot, enterprise environmental factors and organizational process assets. The enterprise environment.
Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, and welcome to the PM Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Study Group Conference Call and Podcast. This is podcast number 76. We are recording this session on the 6th of August, 2009, and we are now totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK guide. Today's topic is project integration management as portrayed in version 4 of the guide to project management body of knowledge. My name is Dana Safford. I'll be your host and presenter today. I work for Hewlett-Packard as a complex problem manager, which means I take a very complex issue that is affecting one of the customer's large production environments, and I manage a project with a virtual technical team that quickly resolves that particular issue. So I'm involved in numerous virtual projects, virtual teams at the same time. As certifications go, I'm a PMP, I'm a Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, and hopefully by the end of October of this year, I'll complete upgrading my ITIL certification to the version 3 expert level. So far, I've got 3 tests down and 2 tests to go, so I'm almost there. So let's move on. If you haven't downloaded a PDF copy of today's presentation, please do so. We distribute the file through Yahoo Groups. We have a group called PM Lessons Learned. So if you need to sign up, if you need the steps in order to join Yahoo Groups, if you haven't been there yet, what you need to do first is go to our website, pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand column, you'll see a pointer labeled Files and Presentations, and that will tell you what you need to do to join Yahoo Groups and sign up for the PM Lessons Learned group. Acceptance is automatic, and then you'll be able to go to download the files. If you are already a member of Yahoo Groups, once you're logged in there, go to the PM Lessons Learned group page, click the Files link in the left-hand column, and then what you're looking for is a folder called Materials for the Monthly PMP Exam Study Group. And once you are in there, it is the 4th file down at the moment anyway. I get in there and I mess things up every now and again. But for right now, it is the 4th file down. The file name is PMLL Integration Management with today's date, August 6, 2009, and it's a PDF file. The title of that particular file is Presentation on Project Integration Management with the August 6, 2009 date as well. You'll also see a bunch of other files there from the last couple of months of calls, so if you want to grab any of those, feel free to do so. But there's some helpful things in there. As we were talking before I turned on the recording, I've also placed up there a file.
Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Oh. Welcome to the PM Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Study Group Conference Call and Podcast. This is podcast number 76. We are recording this session on the 6th of August, 2009, and we are now totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK guide. Today's topic is Project Integration Management as portrayed in version 4 of the Guide to Project Management Body of Knowledge. My name is Dana Safford. I'll be your host and presenter today. I work for Hewlett-Packard as a complex problem manager, which means I take a very complex issue that is affecting one of HP's customer's large production environments, and I manage a project with a virtual technical team that quickly resolves that particular issue. So I'm involved in numerous virtual teams at the same time. As certifications go, I'm a PMP, I'm a Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, and hopefully by the end of October of this year, I'll complete upgrading my ITIL certification to the version 3 expert level. So far, I've got 3 tests down and 2 tests to go, so I'm almost there. So let's move on. If you haven't downloaded a PDF copy of today's presentation, please do so. We distribute the file through Yahoo Groups. We have a group called PM Lessons Learned. So if you need to sign up, if you need the steps in order to join Yahoo Groups, if you haven't been there yet, what you need to do first is go to our website, pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand column, you'll see a pointer labeled Files and Presentations, and that will tell you what you need to do to join Yahoo Groups and sign up for the PM Lessons Learned group. Acceptance is automatic, and then you'll be able to go to download the files. If you are already a member of Yahoo Groups, once you're logged in there, go to the PM Lessons Learned group page, click the Files link in the left-hand column, and then what you're looking for is a folder called Materials for the Monthly PMP Exam Study Group. And once you are in there, it is the 4th file down at the moment anyway. I get in there and I mess things up every now and again. But for right now, it is the 4th file down. The file name is PMLL Integration Management with today's date, August 6, 2009, and it's a PDF file. The title of that particular file is Presentation on Project Integration Management with the August 6, 2009 date as well. You'll also see a bunch of other files there from the last couple of months of calls. So if you want to grab any of those, feel free to do so. There's some helpful things in there. As we were talking before I turned on the recording, I've also placed up there a file that lists a bunch of version 4 study references. It's a little difficult to find them right now since we've just switched over to version 4 last month, at least the test has anyway. And so it's hard to find things. I've given you some ideas and where to go. To find things there. If you happen to go down into the past study call group files, a lot of the stuff there, in fact, all the stuff there is for PMBOK version 3, so be careful using those things. Roughly 30% of the material is different from version 3 to version 4, and that's pretty much all in the processes in their ITTOs. So you can use other things in there, like David's EVM presentation and a few other things, but use it with a grain of salt, and if it talks about a process or inputs, tools and technique and outputs, be careful, because that's where all the changes are in version 4, pretty much. Finally, if you're on a shorter time scale and are willing to make a commitment to actively participate and take turns presenting, you've heard David already talk about our weekly study group that we have. And then for more information on that, you can send an email to pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. All right, any questions before I get started? All right, hearing nothing. I heard a couple of people doing star sixes. Thank you so much. I've already muted anybody, so anyone who's just joined the call, if you could do a star six, I would appreciate it if you mute your phone so we don't get so much noise, and then we'll get started here. So basically, we are pmlessonslearned.com. We are project managers helping project managers to make a difference, and I'll thank you in advance for attending this month's conference call or listening to the podcast. So let's move to slide 1 of the slide deck. And start talking about what we do here at PM Lessons Learned. We have three calls per month. The first is the one you're on right now. First Thursday of the month is our monthly PMP study group call. On the second Thursday of the month, we talk about job shopping. And for those of you folks who are between jobs or between assignments, you can join that call at the same number, same time, and talk about job search. And Henry provides a lot of nifty stuff for folks in between positions. On the third Thursday of the month, we have our Lessons Learned call. That is the one where we talk about overall topics for project management, risk management. We had one last month about closing projects, things along those lines. So those are general topics on project management. You can listen to any of these things by downloading, connecting to the web, downloading the podcast. So you'll find a link to find the podcast at pmlessonslearned.com. And you can also join our Yahoo group, because that's where all the files are. So if this is your first time here, definitely join that group so you can very quickly get to the files next month. Or if you join any of the other calls in the month, the calls are all at the same Yahoo group. So I'm going to move to the next slide and talk about call norms. This is an interactive call. We really want you to participate, so feel free if you want to ask a question, make a comment, do a star six, unmute yourself, and get my attention so that you can ask your question. Just sing out, and I'll eventually respond to you and acknowledge you, and then you can go ahead and ask your question, because we don't want to be talking over each other if we can avoid it. Moving on to slide three. Our email address, as we've mentioned before, is pmstudy@pmlessonslearned.com is the one to get to us for most things. So use that one should you need to reach us for anything in particular. And now moving on to slide four is the legalese that I need to go through. The participants of this first Thursday of the month call are really meant to use this material as additional study material. Because we really want to make sure you have all the right critical mass to pass your test on the first try. Much of the material in the sessions comes from one of my opinion, one of the best books on PM study, and that is Kim Heldman's Project Management Professional Exam Study Guide. The fifth edition is the edition that focuses on version 4 of the PMBOK. It's produced by and is part of the CYBEX series by John Wiley and Sons. And the ISBN number is there, so you can get right to the fifth version. It's to make sure if you're going to buy a book, it is the fifth version, and with that you get a study guide, you get a CD with practice tests, flashcards, and a test engine for under $70. You can't beat it for folks who are between assignments right now, so it's probably the best buy out there. All of the material in this is used with the permission of the publisher. I have instructor privileges with the CYBEX series. So we get to share the information with you folks. And with that, I'm moving to the title slide on slide five. We're talking about project integration management today, and we'll start right away by getting into the next slide. Slide six, where we're looking at the overall project integration management knowledge area. We're down from seven processes in version 3 to six processes in version 4. They've done a little mixing and matching, and they've done a whole bunch of changes inside the inputs, tools, and techniques, and the outputs. So as I mentioned earlier, this is where the bulk of the changes are from version 3 to version 4. So use any version 3 material you have with a grain of salt. Try to grab the version 4 stuff that we have up in our PM Lessons Learned file area. That's the best way to start right now, or start finding some things on the internet that will help you. If you've never joined one of these calls, what I will do is work through each one of these processes. We'll talk about inputs, tools, and techniques, and outputs, and some of the other ancillary things that you need to do. With version 4, what we've done is actually pull some things out of some of the earlier version 3 presentations. They're going to be separate things, like when we get to how to choose a project, things along those lines. We're going to turn that into a separate Thursday night presentation, because there's a lot there. So we're going to start right now by moving to slide 7 and talk about project management and integration, the integration of projects. And this is basically concerned with the coordination of all of the aspects of a project plan. And I just noticed that typo in there. It is highly interactive, and we'll see how interactive it is on the next slide. Looking at slide 8, you see an eye chart there. These are all the flows that that the PMBOK is showing for just one of the processes in there. So you, as you can see, there's arrows going all over the place. This slide has more arrows than a Boy Scout camp in the archery section. So be aware of all as many of these as you can. You don't have to memorize the flows per se, but you, to the greatest extent possible, if you can remember the inputs, the tools and techniques, and the outputs, it'll help you, because there will be questions on those as you take the test. The folks that I've talked to who have taken the test in version 4 so far said they probably had 10 or so questions, 10 or 15 questions perhaps, on inputs, tools, and techniques, and outputs of various things. So it's still a decent part of the test. Moving on to slide 9, we're beginning to talk about charters now, moving on to getting ready to talk about the first process. Officially, what a project charter does is recognizes that a project exists. It authorizes the project to begin. It'll assign a project manager, hopefully, talk about a business need, talk about requirements, perhaps, and it ties that project into something for the organization, hopefully. Moving on to slide 10. Here is the process. Develop project charter. It's process number 4.1. And you see the five separate inputs. We'll talk about those in turn, one tool and technique and one output. And then we'll carry on to slide 11. The first input we'll talk about is a statement of work, or SOW. You'll see that abbreviation a lot. If you have one of these, what it's going to do is provide a description of the project, the service, or whatever is expected from this particular project. If it is external, then maybe your buyer is going to provide the statement of work, because they're going to explicitly tell you what they want out of your consultancy, whatever the case may be. They'll talk about business needs, hopefully. Maybe talk about something about the scope to give you an idea of something about some scope, but you'll have to develop scope later on as well. Talk about what the project should really be, and maybe provide some tie into the company's strategic plan. Why is this project there? It might get into some project selection techniques, but probably not. If you made it this far, the chances are you've already been through some project selection technique. And what we'll do is in the next coming months, we'll have a separate session on what goes into selecting a project. There are a whole bunch of different ways to do it. And your company, your group, your organization has their own way of doing things. And we'll try to talk about some of those financial and non-financial methods of selecting projects in another session. Moving on to slide 12, we talk about needs and demands. You'll always hear about needs and demands. Why do projects happen? There are six of them in general. You could probably add a few more, excuse me, but basically there are six that we have to pay attention to. As you see, market demand, business need, request of a customer, some technological advance that requires you to have a project that will move you or along, keep you up with technology so your product does not become a dinosaur. There might be legal requirements that you have to pay attention to, or maybe some social needs or something along those lines. But these are normally the reasons why projects are initiated. There's something in one of these six things, and this will most likely be on the test in some shape or form. Moving to slide 13, let's talk about the next input, and that is the business case. This is a brand new process, input, I should say, to a process. Back a few years ago in version 3, they started thinking about business analysts. Anyone who's traveling around in business circles are now seeing a whole lot of discussion around business analysts. There are several trade show seminars that are for business analysts. There's even a good one called projectsummit.com that combines business analysis and project management into one seminar, one symposium. So in a four-day period, you can get a little bit of each thing. It's becoming, they have their own body of knowledge called a BABOK, their own body of knowledge, their own tests, and their own certification. But you will work, and sometimes as a project manager, hand-in-hand with the business analyst, and that business analyst will provide the business case that you need to understand why you're going through this. And they will help you provide those cost-benefit analyses and whatever else. The viability of that project. Why is it there? Why do you need it? Moving on to slide 14. If you're working outside, there'll be a contract that if the customer is external to the organization, and you're probably aware of contracts in any case, but they're going to document expected outcomes, conditions, time frames, all the legal stuff, because it is a legal binding document. There's all kinds of things in a contract for time frames, costs, remediation, all those types of things that will all be pointed out in the contract. So if you have an external one, you'll have to pay attention to that. Moving on to slide 15. And then we have two inputs that you're going to see a lot, enterprise environmental factors and organizational process assets. The enterprise environmental factors are all the things that that make up your organization. They are the structure, any industry standards that you have to work toward, any infrastructure or resources that you need to use, stakeholder influence, risk tolerances, things along those lines. Anything that is particular to you, to your environment is what you'll be using. Where OPAs are more tangible, if you will. They are lessons learned, historical lessons learned from other projects. They are risk processes, earned value management processes, schedule templates, baseline templates, any other lessons learned, any software that you use, be you use Project, Primavera, Team Play, Open Workbench, whatever the case may be. You might have a methodology. At Hewlett Packard, where I work, we have a global methodology that all the consultants are required to use so that all of our projects look and feel, all the project documentation, I should say, look and feel the same. And we do a lot of recycling of documents because you can really do so many ERP-type contracts when they all start a project to start looking somewhat similar. You can have the same basics as you move forward. So that's where the OPAs come in. There are all those canned documents and templates and checklists that you can use. Moving on to slide 16, we start talking about tools and techniques. The first one, and this is one you'll see a lot in version 4, there'll be a tool and technique all by itself, and that is expert judgment. Is what the folks that put together version 4 are saying is use the expertise of the folks who have been there before you. There are a whole lot of other units, I'm sure, in your organization, in your company, that have done projects. They know that if you do a software development project of X and they've done one a year ago, well, chances are maybe one you're going to do right now is going to be pretty close, and you can use some of the same things that they learned on their project on yours. As consultants, you're going to have a whole lot of dealings with your stakeholders as well, be they customers, sponsors, or other management in your organization you have to pay attention to. There's a whole lot of expert judgment out there, professional associations, industry groups, other subject matter experts, peers of yours who know what's going on. Perhaps you have a program management office you have to deal with, and all kinds of other things. All these things are rolled up in expert judgment. So you see them laid out here in other slides. I'm just going to put expert judgment so we don't see the same slide over and over again. It's going to be the two words, expert judgment. We just mean whoever's been there before you. Pay attention to them. Take advantage of their knowledge. Moving on to slide 17. The output of developed project charter is, guess what, a project charter. And that is going to lay out maybe perhaps the purpose or justify why you're doing what you're going to be doing. You're going to maybe show some objectives, some high-level requirements, some risks, some milestones, maybe some budget stuff in there, maybe say who's assigned, who's going to be working on the project, name of the authority of the person authorizing the project charter. And this is where politics come in, so that you have the authority that you need to move forward with your project. I'm going to move to slide 18 and talk about correctness of publishing a charter. So if you, as a project manager, 9 times out of 10, you are going to be writing the project charter, because it's your job, you do that. But also 9 times out of 10, you should be not, or even 10 times out of 10, you should be not be the person sending out the project charter. Project charter can be nothing but an email, and you'll see an example of one in the next slide. Basically, it's to let everybody know that this project exists and all the things we've been through. So you don't want to be the person sending out that message. You want someone higher up in your organization to be sending it out, a vice president, a CEO, a CIO, something along those lines. to send out this charter statement, so that it gives you some validity, some power, some political capital that you can use. If you send out your own charter statement and you don't have a whole lot of stead within your organization, chances are folks are not going to pay attention to you when it comes time to look for resources, things along those lines. You want to make sure that your project has the highest standing as you possibly can as you're moving forward. I'm going to move on to slide 19. And here's an example of what a project charter could look like. It can be an email, as you see here. And it basically states a responsibility for this particular person, Robert James, assigned as the project manager. Here's their responsibility. Here's their authority. And it's coming from an executive vice president. So you have some political capital. Now Robert James has some muscle that can be used when he's negotiating for certain things. This is all a project charter needs to be. Now, you can have a charter that can be a complete whole document with a whole bunch of sections. That works too. But the point of this slide here is just to show you it doesn't have to be that. An email does the same thing. This is not a quick email by any means. It takes a while to read it. But it certainly lays out Robert James as the person for this project and what they can do. Okay. As we formalize and publish the project charter, I'm going to move to slide 20. We talk about stakeholders. You've got your project manager, who's yourself, most likely. Project sponsors, you should be using your project sponsors to rally support for your project. Maybe they can rally support from other organizations, depending on the type of organization you are in. We'll probably talk about organizational structures and their impact on projects in yet another session. Maybe there's a project champion around, depending upon your organization. And functional managers need to be supportive as well. So you need to work through all of these people, and that charter statement is really going to help you work through most of these people. You want to have their support behind you before the charter is published. But then while you're doing your project, you might have to go back to that charter if you are negotiating for some resources and are having a difficult time. Moving to slide 21, eventually the project charter needs to be signed off. Maybe your organization requires, once that is sent out, it requires signatures or agreement of a certain group of folks. And what you can do there is if you all are in one nice place, then you can have people sign off on it. But if you're distributed around the world, like a lot of companies are nowadays, an email that says, I've seen this project charter, I've read the project charter, I agree with the project charter, consider this email a sign-off. That works as well. So you want to make sure that you have those things coming back from the named individuals that you sent this charter to, so that you know they're buying off, they are aware of your project, so you don't hear, 2 months from now when you need a resource, what project is that again? And then you can whip out the charter and their acknowledgement and say, hey, look, I need a resource. You said you would provide me what I needed. So it comes in handy to have that with you. And always keep it in your archives. Okay, so there's any questions on project charters before I move on? All right, hearing nothing, I'm going to move on to the project management plan now on slide 22. And as we talk about developing a project management plan, this really defines what processes are going to be used to develop the project. You may have a methodology in your organization that you need to use. Defines how the project is going to be executed, how it's closed, defines the documents and things along those lines that you'll be needing to use. Moving to slide 23, we look at the actual process itself, develop project management plan, process number 4.2. And we have a few inputs. You notice that both of those bottom two inputs are those EES and those OPAs. So we're going to see those a lot. And you notice tool and technique is expert judgment. So we're going to be ripping through this one relatively quickly, I would say. So let's move to slide 24 and look at the inputs. We've already talked about the project charter. You've got that in your hand. It's in your repository, in your project file that you've got in your file. These are going to be a file cabinet, or it's going to be an email repository or a document repository somewhere that you can get at it should you need to. You're also going to be looking at outputs from previous planning processes. So we're talking about maybe only going through the first time as we start this, but as we get further along, you'll see that this is an iterative process, and we'll be going through this pretty much every time we hit a phase. We're going to be going through updating the project plan, the project management plan. So this this second input here is assumes that we've been through at least one cycle, one iteration, and we're coming back around with any updates as we look at outputs from processes down the road from this session and tonight. You're going to see updates to files, update to project management plan, update to project documents. That's what this bullet is right here. It's going to take and it's completing the cycle so that you can update anything you need to in your project plan. Anything in chapters 5 through 12 that we'll be going through in subsequent Thursday nights as we work our way through the year here. It needs to become your baselines, and as major changes are your very first one you do is your original baseline, and then every now and again you snap another project baseline depending on what's going on. It depends on your organization. So be aware of the updates on the other planning processes and how they work through here. And as I mentioned, we have EES and OPAs. We've talked about those. I'm going to move on. Let's look at slide 25. We talk about tools and techniques, and we have expert judgment. And in this case, we're going to talk about expert judgment and utilize it to maybe tailor some of the processes. Maybe this project is a little bit different. Maybe it's not. If it's not, then someone who's already been here before can say, hey, I did it this way. Try this. And it may work just fine for you. So as necessary, use those subject matter experts to help you. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. And I'm going to move on to slide 26 and talk about some planning fundamentals, because we've talked about the project management plan, but what do you do with it now? And how do you work through it? And with on slide 26, you see that if a task is well understood, then you can pre-plan a whole lot of the activities going on. So as you're working through and scheduling your tasks and your durations and things along those lines, when we finally get into the scheduling thing, there's a task that your company, you or your team has done numerous times. You almost have to give it no thought. It's just a matter of how many lines of code, how big is the house, how long is the bridge, whatever the case may be. And you'll already have an idea of how long the task is going to take and how much that task is going to cost. So you can blow right through it very quickly. But if the task is not really understood very well, it's something new, a new technology, whatever, then maybe during the execution phase, you're going to learn a whole lot more. You're going to make your estimates going in the planning phases, but as you're executing, you're going to tweak that a little bit, and you're going to learn a lesson here or there. And then you're going to make some changes. And obviously, the more uncertain the task, the greater the amount of information that has to be processed in order to know what's going on. But then once you've been through that once, that goes into your lessons learned, and you are now the subject matter expert to help the next person with the next project coming down the road. Moving on to slide 27, we're talking about outputs now. What's the major output? The plan itself. You have to come up with a project management plan. This is probably going to be more than an email, but it does not have to be a 6-inch bound book either. You can put this into a Word document, some type of text document with different sections and things like that, with a bunch of tables and spreadsheets and things along those lines that meet your needs. Whatever your company, with your organization dictates you should use is what you should use. And hopefully they're going to provide you with some examples, and it's going to have various sections in it that you'll have to fill out. Maybe there'll be a bunch of boilerplate that you can do. But there's going to be things in there that you're going to add to. When we come to talk about communication, we'll be talking about a communication matrix and who you should be talking to and how you should be talking to them, how you should be communicating with them. That can be a table in this. It doesn't have to be a huge section. It can be a table in your project management plan. When we talk about risk management, we'll be talking about a risk register. That's not some big, huge thing. It's probably just a spreadsheet. Or a table that you can turn into a table and you stick it in the project management plan. Everything can live in here. It doesn't have to be one document. It can be a series of documents. It can be whatever you want it to be. It can be in a file cabinet should you need to. But you're going to put in there a whole lot of things based on whatever life cycle processes that your company demands, your organization demands, looking at the processes you're going to be using, the level of implementation you're going to be using for each one of those, descriptions of tools and techniques you'll be using for your project, not tools and techniques for this process, but the tools and techniques for your project is what we're talking about here, and how we'll be using those for every specific project, per se. moving to slide 28, are some of the other things. Maybe how the work will be executed to accomplish the project objectives. Maybe there's a certain way things have to be done. If it's a government project, there's certain steps you must take, things along those lines. Maybe there's a change management, maybe there should be a change management section that details how changes are going to be implemented, how they should be documented, things along those lines, how they should be controlled. And there'll probably be a configuration management plan in there that documents how all this works. So these are some of the things that will be inside your project management plan, and you're going to be all set up to work through this. I'm going to move on to slide 29, and so that's the end of that process. Any questions on process 4.2, doing the project management plan? Okay, so now we're on slide 29, talking about direct and manage project execution. This is process 4.3. We've got a few inputs, a couple more tools and techniques, and some outputs to go through. So I'm going to hit them one by one here. So let's move to slide 30 and start talking about some of the general things first. As we work through direct and manage project execution, we really want to make sure that we understand this is what we're going to be, the processes we're going to be using to carry out the project plan. This is where the work gets done, initially getting things going. We're going to direct and manage the execution of what's going on. You're going to set things up. You're going to decide who's doing what. You're going to put it all together, and you're going to make it happen. This is where the rubber meets the road. And what we'll find is one of the most difficult aspects of doing this is coordinating everything. Remember back to that flow chart, how many arrows and lines and things were on that. There's a lot of work to be done here. And so we just have to be aware that this has to happen and make sure that you spend the right amount of time coordinating and integrating all of these things as you're moving along. Moving on to slide 31. Remember that the project plan serves as the project baseline. The very first time you publish that plan, there's your first baseline. Or your schedule, your costs, everything else, your risks, your resources, all those baselines you set up. There's four or five different baselines, maybe more depending upon your company, your organization, require you to baseline a whole bunch of different things. Some maybe not so much, but in a lot of companies, there's a lot of baselines you have to do. And as you're working through, make sure that you continually compare and monitor your project performance against that baseline. Why? So you know if something's not where it should be, and you can slap it back into compliance before it's too late. You notice those big red bullets now instead of the little tiny bullets. These big red bullets here will let you know that something is most likely going to be on the test because folks have seen it in the last few weeks. excuse me. And as far as PMI goes and waterfall project management, you're doing a ready, aim, fire type of thing. This is not agile. Doing ready, aim, fire. So once you've fired, you're looking to see where that arrow, where that bullet is going. And if it starts to stray off course, you're not moving your target. You're going to slap the arrow, you're going to slap the bullet back onto where you said it was going to be. If you come to find out you've really made some mistakes, you have to change your target eventually, but you're only going to do that a couple of times tops through your project, if at all. It's not something you're going to change very frequently. So just be aware you're going to watch for things. If it's out of compliance, you're going to bring it back into compliance. And the PMBOK guide says as you do that, you have to do some type of corrective action. And when you do that, you've got to follow your process, whatever that happens to be, a change control process of some kind. You can't just reach out and slap it back. You've got to follow your documentation. You've got to justify with schedule and cost and whatever else. Why are you doing this? And it has to go through a change. Should go through a change review board. I'll spit it out correctly, so that it's fully documented. And you've got an item log, a change log. It's another thing in your project plan or your project documents. Better way to say it that you're keeping track of, so that you can follow what's changed and when. Because guaranteed, 6 months down the road, someone's going to say, what's going on here? Why did we change that? You can go back to your issue log and say, hey, yeah, so here's the change request right here. Here's what we did. Here's who signed it, and here's why we're in compliance now. Okay, moving on to slide 32. Now we're looking at the inputs. for direct and managed project execution. We've already talked about the project management plan. The new one here is approved change request that I just finished talking about. As you found things that need to be tweaked somehow, you're going to follow your whatever process your company wants you to do and make a change. You're going to make a request of some type. But you're not going to make the actual change until the request is approved, because there may be some requests that aren't going to be approved for one reason or another. Perhaps something is going to cost too much to make a change, so your sponsors, your management, have said, we're going to live with it the way it is. It isn't what we planned, but we can deal with it the way it is. That can happen as well. So you've got all these changes that have to go through, and we're talking about approved change requests here because this is something that now you're going to implement, but you're also probably going to have some change requests that are not approved, as I mentioned. You still keep track of those as well, because someone six, 9 months down the road is going to say, whatever happened to that change we were going to do, whatever it might be. And you get to look through your log and say, well, we didn't implement that because the board didn't approve it because why? Here's why. So pay attention to that, and you'll be able to make sure that folks understand why you did not make a change just as much as why you did. And then we have EES and OPAs that we're not going to get into right now because they're the same things. Moving on to slide 33. We've got tools and techniques. We've got expert judgment, a little bit different slant on expert judgment now. We'll be talking some about the whatever other inputs might be needed. And we talk about technical and management details around this point now, any fine-tuning that needs to happen. And then with the expertise that's provided by your project management team, there may be some specialized knowledge that you have to bring to bear. And you can pull those things from other units, from consultants, from stakeholders, and from maybe technical and professional associations as well. So reach out to a broad audience for that expert judgment. And then the new tool and technique here is some type of project management information system. Now, this is version 4 of the PMBOK. They want this to be some type of software product, but it doesn't have to be. If you only get a small project, you could have this be a notebook. A paper notebook, a spiral binder, a three-ring binder, something along those lines. It does not have to be a computer. It does not have to be something that is a huge mainframe that crunches things out, or a PC with Project or Primavera or Open Workbench or something like that on it. It can be whatever you want to use. But you'll find that for most larger middle-sized projects, now even small projects inside corporations, they're using some type of software package. To pull things together, be it Project, be it Primavera or Teamplay, any of those types of things. And they're keeping it someplace on a SharePoint, or if you're doing it on paper, in a file cabinet, in a three-ring binder, someplace. We're pulling it all together, and that's going to be your information system. So if you need to look something up, you have one place to go. This is the point of this tool and technique. And moving on to slide 34 and the outputs, basically we have whatever deliverables. As we're now directing and we're right in the middle of execution now, so we've got deliverables coming in and going like crazy here. So your outputs of this phase or this process are all your deliverables, whatever they happen to be. And you're just going to keep track of them. You're going to watch when they should start, when they should end, make sure scheduling is correct, things aren't being done out of sequence. All those types of things, and to do that, you're going to be receiving work performance information. and as the work is performed, you're going to be keeping track of it and checking it off on your schedule, so that you can see if you're where you are schedule-wise and cost-wise and resource-wise. You need to know when to bring resources in, when to let resources go. All those types of things are kept track of using work performance information, and hopefully it's going to be in your project management information system. Moving on to the next slide, 35, we're talking about the outputs. So as you're working through your process here, you're working through your execution, you've noticed something needs to be changed, you're going to be coming up with change requests. So here's where you identify what has to be changed from a corrective point of view, or maybe from a preventative point of view, or maybe there's some defects around that you have to worry about, or maybe there's an update somewhere that you have to pay attention to, a new version of something that you must now use. There are also project management plan updates, so as you're working through things, anything you need to update to your original project management plan, do that. Maybe you need to snap a baseline, maybe you don't. And then project document updates, these are all those other documents I was talking to you about. project logs, risk registers, stakeholder registers, all those types of things that you have to pay attention to and keep up to date as well. Moving on to the next slide, 36. I'll stop for a moment and say that's the end of that process. Are there any questions on direct and managed project work? Okay, hearing nothing, we move on slide 36. Now we're on the next process, 4.4, which is monitor and control project work, because as we're executing, we have to watch and see what's happening. That's what this process is all about. We will look and we do measurements. We look and see what's happening, and if things are going along fine, then great. We're doing well. If things need to be tweaked, here's where I identify the fact that they need to be tweaked and do something about it. Okay, so I'm going to move on to slide 37, pardon me. Move on to slide 37 and talk about some generic things. This process is concerned with monitoring everything going on in all of the groups to make sure that everything is happening at the right point in time, that things are sequenced correctly, nothing's being performed out of sequence, that things are on time, on budget, whatever the case may be. And you're going to be collecting a ton of data depending upon your project. And what you need to do is have some way to analyze it, so some way to measure, analyze, and report, and then finally act, four different steps. This is sort of like the plan, do, check, act thing that we'll have to be talking about in yet another session, Schuin's processes there. That you're going to be doing a lot of that just within this one process to make sure things are moving along the way they should be. Moving on to slide 38, we're going to be, as I mentioned, reporting and compare actual results, what's going on, make sure there isn't anything that you have to pay attention to, analyze that data, recommend preventative or corrective actions. You're going to monitor risks, make sure you plan for a risk to happen 3 months down the road. It's now 2.5 months down the road. Is that risk still there? If it is, then you get ready to deal with it somehow, whatever strategy you set up in the risk management process that we'll get to in a few months to work through that. And are there any other risks coming up that you hadn't seen as we pay attention to all that? And continue documenting your information and making sure you change requests and moving along nicely. Moving on to slide 39, we'll talk about some inputs. We still have our project management plan, excuse me, but now we have a new one, project, try it again, performance reports. Here's where, as you're doing your measurement, you're going to come up with reports on what's happening. Are things within your control limits that you laid out, or are they not? Are they what you expected to see, or are they not? And what are you going to do about it? And as you do this, you're going to be coming up with, here's where we are now with actual cost, actual schedule. Here's where we're going to be coming up with forecasts for the next step or plan to completion. There'll be a whole lot of things we'll be talking about in the earned value segment. David Radkovich is on the bridge right now. We'll be leading that particular session on earned value management and how to pay attention to schedules and schedule variances and cost variances as through the earned value management process. So there's a lot of things to pay attention to there. And then any issues that crop up, you need to pay attention to issues. If you can deal with them yourself, fine. But if you cannot and you need some extra horsepower, that's where your sponsors come in. And you want to make sure that you engage your sponsors early and often through this. Make sure you keep them informed of what's going on. You'll have a communication plan in your project management plan that says how often you're going to formally communicate with your sponsors. But as a good rule of thumb, you should be hitting your sponsors informally as often as you can, depending upon where they're located around the world. If they're in the same building as you, you can stick your face in their doorway every single day to say, hi, here's what's happened. If they're not, send an email, chat room, whatever the case may be, very frequently, a few times a week, if not once a day, to see what's going on. Keep those sponsors happy. And the same EES and OPAs are there, so we won't go into those. And we'll move on to slide 40 and talk about tools and techniques. There's nothing new here, according to the PMBOK guide. They say expert judgment, but what I'll tell you at the bottom of the slide is you're going to be using your project management methodology, whatever it is for your company that laid out for you to use. You're going to be using your information system, whatever that happens to be, and you will be using earned value management or something like that in order to keep track of what's going on. Moving on to the next slide, we talk about the outputs now for monitor and control project work. And these are those change requests that we've seen when something's gone wrong, be it a corrective or preventative or action or a defect repair. Now you've got to do something about it. And here's where you get to fill out the paperwork and submit things to a change control board. And you should have some board somewhere to approve all these changes, unless your project or your authority is to the point where you have the authority to approve all changes. Chances are that won't be the case, because some changes cost a whole lot more than others. But you should have laid out what your line of authority is. You can approve up to so much, excuse me, and then from that point on, it has to go to another manager. All right, so you have to pay attention to that and make sure you follow those types of things. And then there are project management plan updates that you have to pay attention to as well, so that you need to make changes to the schedule piece, the cost piece, the quality piece, baselines of some type, you're able to make those changes. All right, moving on to the next slide, slide 42. We'll talk about outputs. And as far as output goes, we have our project document updates. These are all the checklists and things along those lines, your forecast, your performance reports, your issue logs. You might have something in your project plan too, but chances are most of them are going to be in the project document section in this stage. And then you have forecasts you're going to be producing for your management. So they're always going to want to know when you're going to be done, how much is it going to cost. So this is one that you should pay attention to as well. This is one that I've added in, because you need to make sure that folks are aware of what's going on and what to expect. They don't like surprises. Surprises are bad. So if you know that you're going to be over budget or behind schedule or come in early, better yet, way in advance, 6 months in advance, you tell them 6 months in advance. You don't wait till the day before and do that. That's where forecasts come in handy. Moving on, so that is it for that process. Any other questions on monitor and control project work? Okay, we're moving along quite nicely through here. Don't be afraid to sing out if you have a question from time to time or a comment. All right, now we're on slide 43. We're talking about perform integrated change control. And with integrated change control, this is where everything sort of comes together, if you will. This is the switch box for making sure things happen. And we've got a decent number of inputs here and a decent number of outputs as well. So let's go take a look at them. And we'll start with a little bit of generic stuff first. On slide 44, see, this is the overseer, if you will, of monitoring and controlling processes. This is where the change control process really comes to play. This is where the change review board should be set up, be it called CCB, CRB, whatever you want to call it. This is where they operate. And any changes need to come through here to make sure that they are known, they are understood, and they are blessed by the appropriate people. And both this process and the one we just finished talking about can generate these change requests, and it's all managed through here, as I mentioned. This is the switch box for making all the changes take place and get approved. Moving on to slide 45. Let's talk about how change occurs for a little bit, why change occurs. It comes from a lot of different places. Your stakeholders can decide, well, no, I want to do it this way instead. As you think you are the project manager, you have ultimate authority over your project, a lot of times you find that's not necessarily so, as the saying goes, because your stakeholders may control the budget, may control whatever else is over you. They want something done differently. They're going to have it done their way. And depending on the size of your organization, it will depend upon how easily they can do that. If you're in a small organization, they'll probably dictate everything. And you may think you're the project manager and have the project manager title, but you find that your sponsors and your management are making a lot of the decisions and a lot of the changes for you. That happens. You get used to it. And you move on, and as you move on to larger projects in different companies, you'll find that your level of autonomy and authority will go up over time. Your team members might find something that can be changed as well. They might find something that's not being done correctly or a better way to do something. And if they can come up with a better way to do something that saves a lot of time or money, it may be worthwhile doing. Maybe if there's a mistake someplace that somebody made and they found, well, we have to make a change, because see, people keep making the same mistake over and over again. That's a bad thing. You need to change that. and then maybe there's some contingency plan. There's a risk down the road that we're going to hit this risk definitely. Now we have to implement a contingency plan, and now things are going to change there for whatever reason. You know, so that's another reason for change to occur. Moving to slide 46. Some of the concerns you have to pay attention to, and these are two exam points. According to the PMBOK, the change control is primarily concerned with all those things that you see there. So ICC, as you work through this, pay attention to these types of things because there could be questions on the test that will list some smattering of these items and turn it into a question. And you've got to pick out the ones that are correct and the ones that aren't correct. But you want to work on the influencing factors, determining changes needed, managing the approved changes, updating any of the requirements that have to happen on scope, quality, schedule, or the budgets, and documenting all this stuff. And then, you know, managing change involves maintaining accurate records. As you make changes, every now and again, you have to snap a new baseline if there's a significant change. Keeping track of those baselines is what you really need to pay attention to. And the baseline only goes forward. Baseline doesn't go behind. Anything in the past is sunk. It's an actual cost, if you will. It's an actual schedule. You don't change that on your baseline. Your baseline is from today going forward is where things are going to change. And perhaps you're going to change the scope as well as you move on. Your mileage will vary, but you will see these things from time to time. And in slide 47, as we work through these, as I mentioned, you've set up a performance baseline. This is yet another baseline that you can do. What are you going to be doing on your project to understand where you are, where you need to go? And as you work through these, you'll be using the baseline throughout executing and monitoring and controlling to measure your performance and determine deviations from the plan. There's a good exam point there. You'll probably see that on the exam somewhere. And the changes that impact an existing or completed project management process will require updates to this process. So we need to make sure that they don't catch you on, well, you don't have to do an update. Yeah, you have to do the update is where this is, what that exam point is telling you. And moving on to slide 48. Now we're getting into the actual inputs and things. First of all, we see project management plan and we see work performance information. We've already talked about those. Those are the sections they're in. So I'm going to move on. If we talk about change requests now, these are inputs from the other process. We've created them. They've been approved in the other process, or written up, I should say, in the other process. And now they come here to go through the change review board and get blessed as to whether they're going to be implemented or not. As we said, it can cover a variety of different things, corrective, preventative, defect, whatever the case may be, and you're going to follow through with them and make sure if they affect any, if they're major changes, you tweak the baseline, snap a new baseline, and move forward. And keep sure, make everything sure everything's documented so that there's no questions down the road. If there is a question down the road, you have at your disposal the whys and the wherefores of why you did or did not do something. And then as our old friends, the EEFs and the OPA, so we're going to move on and jump right over those guys because they're the same ones we've already talked about. We look at the tools and techniques. There's two of them here, expert judgment, as we'll always see. And now we see the actual change control meetings. This is the meeting of your change control board, whatever it happens to be. It can be a dozen people. It can be two people. Somebody who's looking over things to making sure that things are reviewed and they are approved based on some matrix of if it costs more than X amount of months in schedule or years in schedule and X number of dollars or yen or whatever the case may be, the right approval bodies take a look, the right individuals take a look at. And everything should be documented. Stick it in your issue log, in your change review log. Everything should be numbered, change number mumble, whatever you want to do. So a lot of companies use CR and then a number, however many digits long, a change request or CRB and a number, whatever the case it may be. But you number everything so you can go back and reference to it later on as you need to. And that's where this all happens is in change control meetings is a strong tool and technique in this process. And moving on, talk a little bit more about change control systems. The documented procedures on how you're going to do things, as I mentioned, looking at a change review board, whatever the case may be for your particular company, they can also be subsystems. They are subsystems, I should say, of the configuration management system. Now, being as part of, I'm working through my ITIL certification, if any of you are ITIL aware, this is not the same configuration management system in ITIL. This change configuration, this configuration management system is a knowledge database. And it contains all of the company's policies, standards, procedures, and any other project documents that they want to have. It's part of your OPAs. This is not the same type of configuration management knowledge base that is in an ITIL project. Okay, so just be aware of that. And so an example you see there is track the status as well. So as you're working through things, you know the status of what change requests are in the pipeline, if you will. They've been submitted, they've got a number, you can track the status. Mostly the time that's going to be a spreadsheet or a table or something like that in an email, in a document that you can track things.
Dana?
Yes, sir.
This is David. I just thought I'd jump in with a pretty good example of configuration management here.
Okay.
Is when I was a service manager working in Asia, as an example, you know, our network was connected, you know, through various cities and that. And if we were going to make a change to one of the routers in the network, you know, that request to make that change to that router would have to flow through me so that I knew the next day if somebody in Australia was having trouble connecting to a database back into the U.S., I know that we had made a change somewhere within the network, and I could say, hey, maybe that change is what affected, you know, the network. You know, let's say one of our hubs was Singapore and everything flew through Singapore and that was the router they changed, I would know that, hey, they changed that router, now somebody in Australia is having problems connecting. That might likely be the cause of the problem. So that's, I think, a pretty good example of configuration management.
Right, sure is. And I can tell you numerous situations that I've dealt with in my conflict problem manager job. Well, I arrive, ask, something's gone awry, you just mentioned, and I'll ask the customer, well, what changed recently? And what, 9 times out of 10, what's the answer?
Nothing.
And come to find out, as you said, the night before, a router changed or there was an outage someplace else and it caused a ripple effect and things come back and it comes to find out it was the customer's own doing that caused a particular issue. So that's an excellent point, David, keeping track of this stuff and knowing when the changes occur and when they, not only when they're approved, but when they're implemented as well and having that accessible someplace. You'll need that as part of a project, but in ITIL parlance, you need to know that as well for the same type of reasoning. So it's an excellent point. Thanks, David, for that. All right, I'm going to move on to slide 51 here, and we talk a little bit more about the change control system because this is really important. So we spend a few slides here. To make sure you get all the exam points. So you see 4 different potential exam points right on this one slide alone. And when you put the change control system and the configuration management system together, that's how you get to identify, document, and control the changes to the performance baseline. We've seen that question in the past month or so. Also, recommended corrective action is an output of recommended changes is an output of some processes, including the ones you see there. So as you work through things, you'll find that there are changes you need to make, and just be aware that the output is there. If there is an approved corrective action, you'll see it come out of here as well. And remember that the integrated change control is where all the process requests and everything is processed, whether they're approved or denied. It all comes down here. And this is where you need to make sure you pay attention as you're moving forward. All right, so that is perform integrated change control. Actually, one more slide about the configuration control board or TRB or CCB or TAB, whatever the case may be. We've done a lot of talking about it. It's a number of folks who meet on a regular basis, and they have a process that they go through. So just a bit more to help you work through that. If you're not familiar with one of these types of boards, this is a big deal to the PMI. So there's going to be something about this on the test somewhere. Just be aware of it. It can be, as far as members, it can include stakeholders, managers, team members, other people from other organizations can come in as, we'll call them so what I want objective third parties to look at some things perhaps. You never know what it could be, but definitely having a change control board is a good thing to have if you have a large project. And then finally we get to the outputs on slide 53, and basically we have change request status updates is the main output here, and it's whatever happens. It's the approved ones go to one spot, the unapproved ones go to another spot, and everything gets filled in and things move along. And whatever your project management methodology you're required to use takes these outputs and moves on with them. Okay, so and everything is documented, no matter whether it's approved or not. Everything goes in, each thing is numbered, CR, mumble, whatever the number is, approved on such and such a date, rejected on such and such a date, and the reasoning for both. Because as David said, you need that. And the implementation date is another good thing to track. So as David mentioned, you get the day after the implementation date, things don't work, you'll be able to figure out why. Other outputs, project management plan updates. Here's where perhaps you're seeing something major, you have to go back to an update to the project management plan. I'm on slide 54 now, in case I didn't say that. And basically, whatever has to be updated, any subsidiary management plans, those are the risk management plans, the cost management plan, the communication plan, those types of things. If you have to snap a new baseline, go ahead and do that. But remember, as I said, baselines look forward, they don't look backward. So anything on the left-hand side, if you will, the past side of your baseline is actual, it's sunk, you can't change it. You're going to look at change the baseline going forward is where the differences are going to be. And then project documents, whatever you're going to update, request log, change log, risk management logs, communication logs, things along those lines. We'll all receive updates as necessary. Okay, so there's the end of that guy. Any questions on perform integrated change control? And we're on our last topic. We'll blow through this one and then be done for the night. Okay, so here we have closed project or phase. This is number 4.6. This is newly named in version 4 because they've always sort of intimated that you should close a phase of a project and not just the project. Now they actually have it into the wording of the process name itself. So I'm going to move to slide 56 and let's talk about it. This is considered, what we're doing here is gathering all the records that we need to for this phase, if we're doing just closing a phase, or the entire project, if we're doing an entire project. You want to review everything that's gone on and make sure everything is up to date so that you're not putting old information in there. And you're going to document all of your outcomes and make sure you have all that documentation straightened out. And you're going to use that documentation to prove whether or not what you produced is what you said you were going to produce. And you see four exam points down here. We're also looking at whether we're analyzing these processes to determine how effective they are. Maybe there's a better way to do something. So it's not, we're not talking about the project now. We're talking about the process you use to do your project. Perhaps your the project management methodology at your company needs a little tweaking. You should pay attention to that as well. That's what this exam point is all about. And then as we work through things, we want to make sure the second exam point there is we need to make sure we archive everything that we need to for that particular phase or for the project itself. Keep it together, keep it in one place so you can go back to it. And if you happen to be at the end of a project, every project should be closed somehow. The presentation that we had last time last time in July, talked about closure of projects and how projects should be closed. There's various ways to do that. So make sure that you get closure of some kind. And then the final point is the probability of completion of your project is the highest it's ever going to be in this process because you're hopefully near the end. If it's the end of your project, then chances are your project isn't going to be killed, whereas the risk of your project being killed is the highest in the beginning. So it depends. Probability of completion is low in the beginning, high in the end is what this point is bringing out. Moving on to the next slide. So the thing we have to pay attention to here, as I mentioned, is gather records. disseminate information, communicate, that you're ending up, making sure that you have everything together to close things out. If you're doing multiple phases to your project, you're not done with your project itself, but you're done with a phase, make sure that you complete each phase as well. And close that phase out and identify that you've closed phase A and you're moving to phase B, whatever phase B is. Let's look at the inputs quickly. We see our project management plan that we've talked about. We have a new input that's accepted deliverables. As we've been producing deliverables all throughout the project, now we're looking to say, yeah, those are good. We accept what's there. These are what you've already laid out in your scope. So you understand that everything you've provided as part of this project is what you said you were going to do, and you're okay there. And then we have OPAs, because we're documenting all these little bits and pieces that we're talking about. As far as tool and technique, we have expert judgment is the one that they say is going to be here again, where you go where you try to go where your predecessors have been, so that they can help you out. I've added the use of PMIS is to the greatest extent possible. Try to capture all these things in your PMIS, so it's easy for you to grab in whatever type of PMIS you have, be it on a computer, be it in a 3-ring notebook, or be it in a file cabinet. Sometimes you can get to it later on. Don't forget to use your PMIS to record all this stuff. And there's some additional activities you need to pay attention to as well. The administrative closure is one of those things. That's that same gathering of all the documentation that you've gathered. It's just more words saying the same thing, but it's another step that's there. It's not called out expressly in the PMBOK as a tool and technique, but it's something that you can do, and you should do, so that you can get back to find a particular aspect of your project should you need to further down the road. Keep track of all these things and make sure you understand what's there. The exam point you see there is the PMBOK says you should include the processes, the methodologies for defining all those three things you see down there. Any additional requirements of the stakeholders? What could the stakeholders have done better as well? You get to critique the stakeholders, hopefully, as well, if they can cope with it or not. Some stakeholders don't want the feedback. Others do. If you can, give your stakeholders some feedback. Make sure they understand what worked well, what you could have, where you could have used more help from them is another way to look at that. And make sure that you have all that together. Document any necessary actions for the deliverables that they've been carried out and all the exit criteria. Make sure that everybody is aware that you're closing the phase. Make sure everyone's aware that you're closing the project, if you're closing the project. And that's, of course, that's how you assure and confirm that the exit criteria for the phase or for the project are met. So it's that administrative piece, all that documentation. Folks love documentation and this trivia, don't we? All right, moving on to slide 61. We're almost there for the session. Looking at the outputs, we're going to have whatever the final product service result is going to be. It's going to transition either to the next phase or to the end user, whoever the end user happens to be. It's the final outcome of your project. You're done. You're going to have a ribbon-cutting ceremony, break a bottle of champagne, have a party, whatever the case may be. But this is where you get to make all that happen. And as you're doing that, make sure your OPAs are updated as well. Okay, moving on to slide 62. We're going to have some I've already talked about that slide, so we won't worry about that. Slide 62 is the same thing as on slide 61. I'll have to fix that in the new version. And with that, I am done. So with that, I'll tell people do a *6, unmute your phones if you'd like, and let's go through any general questions that you might have about what we've gone over tonight or anything else. And then at some point in time, I'll stop the recording. So let's see what questions are out there. Are there any questions out there? *6 your phones, and let's hear from you, folks.
Dana, this is Jim McCarthy. I got a question.
Sure.
You know, it seems like the PMBOK and you went through this as a knowledge area, and the Kim's book goes through it is the process groups, doesn't it? Is there a reason why?
Well, the way that Pinnock lays things out, a knowledge area on the horizontal rows, if you will, and that's where you get the 4.1, 4.2, 5.1.
Right.
You get chapters 4 through 12. Those are your knowledge areas. Kim's book and the Heltman book goes through it vertically. You are correct. Which I like better, but as we work through study groups, we found that folks tend to want to learn the processes using the knowledge areas first. So for this study group, we've structured things horizontally. In other study groups that I've run, I've actually followed the way Kim Heltman lays things out from a vertical point of view, going through everything in initiation first, and then everything in planning is another section. I actually run 11 sessions when I do it that way, as opposed to 13 sessions when I do it this way. You can get through a little bit faster doing it in the Kim Heltman manner, but as long as you learn the processes, you're going to be okay. You learn the right process names and numbers and the inputs and outputs and the tools and techniques and then all the other ancillary things that you need to pay attention to. So, you're right to bring up the question, well, this isn't exactly the way Kim laid out the book. It's not. But I use the information in Kim's book to fill out all the details for the individual processes, and I just happen to run them horizontally.
Dana?
Yes, sir, David.
This is David again. I think a good way to look at this, too, is that the Pinnock is laid out strictly as a what to do, not a how to do. I think the reason Kim kind of lays it out the way he does is it makes a little bit more sense in the flow of how to do things to the what to do. But I think it's a very
important
issue when you're studying for the exam, you know, to keep in mind, you know, when they ask questions and that, it's more based on what to do than how to do.
And the other thing I found, laying it out the way she does it, the sessions take longer. My average session when I do it and using the vertical process groups is about 2 to 2.5 hours, which is a bit long when you're starting at this time of day for the folks on the East Coast of the U.S. So we try to keep these calls down to roughly an hour to an hour and a half. We're approaching the hour and a half mark right now. And we finish and we're just in open section. So using knowledge areas, we can have shorter sessions. So that's something that we've just decided to do here at PM Lessons Learned and hope it doesn't confuse too many people doing it that way.
No, that's fine. I got another question.
Sure.
Are there any examples out on the web or something of like a project management plan or some of these other documents that you talked about?
Yeah, there are. And the best thing to do is use Google or Bing or something along those lines, and you'd be amazed what's out there as far as examples and such and various. There's a couple of Yahoo groups that try to do some of that, but unfortunately, a lot of the Yahoo groups are besmirched with a lot of spam, a lot of smut, if you will, not because of their own way of doing things. It's just that Yahoo groups tend to see that if you have an open group.
Actually, Dana, I could help with that. This is Roger.
Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, hey Jim. I grabbed a lot of templates that were out there for free. I'll be happy to email them to you. They're either in PDF or Word format. But it gives you a good idea of, you know, when they talk about these subsidiary plans and these logs and, you know, all these things, which I think is what you're looking for, it gives you a really nice little snapshot into, you know, what you should be looking for. Obviously, everything is in general terms, so you tailor it according to how you need it. But, yeah, I have your email address, and I'll send that all out to you.
That'd be great, Roger. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, Dana, I do have a question. I did notice between version 3 and 4, they're still not specifying, so I wanted to get your input because you've been, you know, in the weeds for a long time. Is the project manager usually part of the CCB process?
Uh, They can be part of the CCB process.
That's not what I asked you.
I think what you're asking are, are they members of the board?
Yeah.
What you're asking? And I'd say the answer is most likely no.
Yes, that's what I found over the years too.
Right.
Because
hundreds of projects with any given company, and you don't want hundreds of people on the CCB. But if you're like a one project company, then yeah, maybe they will be. But
yeah, sure. Yeah,
generally,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're not going to come on there.
Right. What I found with one company that I worked for is the Chase Pro Board put out their agenda, and during sessions where they were talking about items that pertain to your project, you were invited to attend that meeting. But you weren't a board member.
Interesting. And so for the most part, maybe I don't care. If I've done a good job of filling out my change request form, I provided them with everything they need,
yeah.
And I pretty much know they're going to approve it because I provided a really good reason.
And it's just
a matter of how often do they meet. Do I have to wait a week or two, or do I have to do an emergency board or something along those lines? And if for this type, whatever type of change request I'm submitting, what's the normal time between when I submit it, when they approve it, and when I can implement it? Because those times are really going to vary big time.
I prefer staying out of it too, because, you know, once the process is done, as long as you got a good answer to come back and you got a process, you know, instead of this is what we decided, you know, you want to have a why, just in case, you know, because you got a lot of developers and engineers working on the solutions for these things, and they want to know why that was rejected, or maybe even a customer or a vendor that's, you know, a subcontractor. So it gets a little complicated sometimes, so the why is very important. So I'd rather stay out of the decision process myself as well than just have a good answer going back, you know.
Right. And if you've done your due diligence with the form and hopefully understand their process. I've done a lot of submissions to a lot of different companies, change review boards, in my role as a complex problem manager, and some of them are very easy and they're very cooperative, while others it's process, and you never get anything through. So your mileage is going to vary depending upon what company you're dealing with.
Do you do that, or do you have the technical folks actually doing the change to fill out the forms?
I've done it both ways. It depends. Sometimes I have more information than the person who would normally fill it out, so I will help them fill it out. You know, say, hey, give me a copy of your form. I'll start filling out with the basic the stuff that I need in there, and then you can fill in whatever you need to sort of grease the skids and make it get through your system in whatever time we need it to do. So I've done it both ways, actually.
Okay.
Dana?
Yes.
This is Judy Miao. I have a question.
I thought it was your voice. I didn't hear you check in earlier. I was going to say,
hey, small good afternoon.
Hey, I didn't hear Judy check in.
I just finished the Persephone group, so
I was tuning in
by phone when Anton was driving. So I couldn't tap in and out. But anyway, during the integration process, I understand that we're putting together, the project manager is putting together all the elements of the project plan, project management plan, and also the subsidiary plans.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do not see a scope management plan. I see a requirements management plan. Are they?
Well, you're going to find that in the scope section, most likely. One of the first sections you're going to... first things you're going to do in the scope section is develop your project scope. So that's most likely going to be what process number is that? I'll figure it out before too long. But that's where that's going to sit is up in the scope management section, which we'll do maybe not next time, but the time after. So I'm going to try to go through these not in order necessarily, but there's been a few knowledge areas that we haven't touched on in quite a while. I'm going to try to hit those first and then come back to the ones that we've touched recently. But I think it's good to see some of those things as well. So
I know that.
Talk about scope, you know, we'll see a lot of that there.
I know that, but I did not see the scope management plan as an output in the framework. They have requirements management plan.
Judy, just David, I really think requirement management is scope management.
Okay, I just wanted a clarification.
It's different wording, but I see it as almost being the same thing. So.
Yeah, they could very well be. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they didn't change it much from integration to scope, in my opinion. So
uh-huh.
That was good. I think, you know, scope should be scope. You know, obviously, the charter feeds into that, that draws on scope.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now that I have the processes up in front of me, for those who haven't noticed it yet, up in their PM Lessons Learned file area on Yahoo Groups, I stuck a spreadsheet up there that lists all of the processes and then the 12x9 matrix or 9x6 matrix with all the processes in there, and then there's a separate tab on the spreadsheet for each of the knowledge areas. And if you look at the output of defined scope, that's where you see the scope statement, the scope plan. That's where they think they're doing it. I agree, the wording could be a little different. But when you're talking about the Herculean effort these folks did to reward this, you know, you can't please everybody. But as long as as David said, the intent was there, that's probably good enough, because everyone's going to tweak this to their own. Once they get through the test, they're going to do whatever the company needs them to do anyway. So it's an excellent point to point out, Judy. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I just noticed it.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
I also like the way they cleaned up a lot of the OPAs and the environmentals as well. They did an excellent job this time around. I mean, that's
right.
Just a comment.
It made it a lot easier. Yeah,
to,
I like
to
the
separate
cleanup.
Things. Yeah.
I like the cleanup. However, it's a bit too simple if one is just memorizing the ITOs, because what are the OPAs? What are the EEFs? So we have to dig one layer below to find out exactly what they're made of.
Well, then that gets back to James' point. It's good to understand the concepts that Kim teaches from a process group perspective as opposed to a process knowledge area.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, they go hand in hand, but my approach was understand the process groups, and then you can hone in on the process knowledge, and then you can drill down into the ITOs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's how I approached it.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't know how your memory is.
Mine is weak, so...
I have plenty of memory. I just have no buffer cache. I can't memorize all of these.
Understand is the key word.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Understand and backfill with a lot of other information that Kim provides that you can pull from a lot of other sources.
Yep.
And do what you can to build that critical mass before you take the test. As I tell folks that are getting close, if you take a practice test and score in the high 70s to low 80s on a practice test, you're probably ready to take the real one, and you'll deal with those ITTO questions as they come up and with your test taking techniques and try to figure out how you've done score wise. So that's one way to work that. Any other questions out there?
Yes, Dana.
Yes.
Dan Quartzoni. How you doing? CCB, that stands for?
Change Control Board is one variant of that.
All right. I thought it was Change Control Board. On slide 62, you have it saying Configuration Control Board.
Well, yeah, it varies. It could also mean Configuration Control. There's also CRB, Change Review Board. They all do the same thing. Companies will take the same function and slap their own name on it. So it's not a name that's sort of cast in concrete. The function certainly is, but the name can go away. It can go by a whole bunch of different names. You know, rose is a rose is a rose, you could say. It's the body that approves changes in your organization. Call it what you want.
Okay, I just thought maybe this was a, because we're talking about configuration just a little while ago, a couple of slides before that, that that might have been just the...
Right, well, right, remember, this is not ITIL, so that configuration database that the FIMBOK talks about is not a, you know, what's connected to what, you know, the disk drives and servers and things along those lines from an ITIL, IT infrastructure library point of view. It is a database that contains all of the documents, the policies, the procedures for your organization. PMI's version of, PMI's version of that configuration management name predates the ITIL one, and they're going to continue to use it. But unfortunately, a lot of us, a lot of us run into configuration management as meaning is what's connected to what in somebody's computer system.
Yeah, it looked like your presentation blended a real world along with, you know, what is in PMBOK. Which were really good examples. As an example, in version 3, they made a distinction between configuration and I'm sorry, I'm missing this word here. Control, and they're actually different. So they're shying away from getting nebulous, I think. So that's pretty good.
Okay, yeah, good. Thanks. Anything else out there? All right, then. What I think I'm going to do then is let me do my ending spiel here, and I'll stop the recording, and then we can clean up any other loose ends that we might have and go from there. So let me do my ending spiel here. And say that, so we are PMLessonsLearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. And as our leader Henry Will tends to say, so long and keep on learning.
All right.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.